and welcome to Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? I'm Annie.
And I'm Dave. Each month we take it in turns to nominate a film, a TV show or book we were a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers.
This month, Annie's choice was Lost in Austin, a 2008 miniseries where a fan of Jane Austen, who lives in contemporary London, is transported into the world of Pride and Prejudice. Why'd you pick it?
I can remember. We went to the theatre a few months ago with our friends Terry and Liz, who were guests on the podcast a few episodes ago, to see a one-man show about Mr. Wickham. And it reminded me of this show because it was kind of an extrapolation of the story of Pride and Prejudice and reframing some of the characters.
It was really good because he was, I don't know, in his 70s or something. And it was retelling of what happened to all of the characters after the end of the book. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, it was really good. And it reminded me of this TV show. And I thought, ooh, I'd quite like to watch that again. Why don't we do it for the podcast? And so here we are.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts overall?
Well,
you'd seen it before, right?
No.
Okay. Because no, I looked up my review from 2008 and it said that we watched it.
No, definitely not.
Okay.
So I thought it was made really cheaply.
Okay.
I thought that it was often quite crude. I thought it had a really slapdash attitude to the idea of having two different realities that intermixed. And I really didn't like the protagonist, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, fair.
I mean, I wouldn't say it was good.
No.
But I really enjoyed it.
Okay, I'm glad.
So what about you? How did it hold up?
Yeah, I really didn't like the protagonist either. She was completely different in my head. I envisaged her much more like me, I think, in some ways. And I thought I had related to her really strongly, and I didn't at all. I didn't like her remotely. And yeah, I didn't think it was particularly good either. And after I'd watched the first episode, I was like, oh God, there's three more episodes. Am I going to make it through this? I thought it got better as it went along.
Absolutely.
And aspects of it were hilarious and really entertaining. But overall, yeah, maybe not so much.
Okay, I mean, I thought it was a really quite positive experience. I came out having really enjoyed it, even though it was not great television.
But how much of a plot synopsis do you think we need?
So the plot synopsis is super short.
Okay.
It's Pride and Prejudice with a random woman from the future, i.e. our contemporary time, with the knowledge of what happens in the book, suddenly arrives in the world of Pride and Prejudice and mucks everything up.
Yes.
Many of the characters go against type for how they are in the book, and things end up in a very, very different place in what I've written in my notes as a, air quotes, jolly romp.
Sure.
And I just want to point out that by far, that I'm sure we'll get to this later, but by far the best thing in it is Hugh Bonneville as Mr. Bennett, who is just so good.
Yes, he is very, very good. I do like Mr. Bennett in this.
I mean, Hugh Bonneville is good in everything, and Mr. Bennett is almost certainly the best character in P&P.
Yeah.
So yeah. Just chef's kiss, that combination. So, yep.
Yeah, I wasn't wholly pleased with all of the casting, but I think Mr. Bennett was definitely the best.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll get into some more of the shenanigans that take place and the divergence from the expected plot as we go through.
I have an entire section that just says, compared to the book.
Nah, fair enough. Do you want to do facts first?
Shortest facts ever.
Oh, wowza.
Okay. Because I found almost nothing. It was written by a guy called Guy Andrews, who just writes one-off episodes of many, many different things. It was directed by a guy called Dan Zeff, who again directed one or two episodes of many, many different things.
Right.
And it starred a whole bunch of people that listeners may have heard of, some of whom I recognise. I'm just going to give a list.
I thought Mrs. Bennett was very good too.
So we've got Jemima Roper.
As?
I didn't write down who.
Oh, really?
I mean, she is the main character.
Amanda?
Yeah.
Okay.
Elliot Cowan, Tom Misson, who I think is Wickham. Alex Kingston, best known for being River Song, is Mrs. Bennett, which is excellent.
Which is not how you would expect her to be, but she's great.
She's very good.
Yeah.
Hugh Bonneville, Tom Riley, and Gemma Arterton as Lizzie Bennett, who is barely in it.
Yeah, which is a shame, because I think she was probably my favourite character. But yes, I mean, Alex Kingston and Hugh Bonneville, I think, make it, definitely.
Although Alex Kingston is leaning quite heavily on the Gurning School of Acting.
Well, yes and no.
She's much more over the top than anybody else is, I think.
Yes, but then Mrs. Bennett is.
Also fair.
And I think her arc in this is really interesting, and I ended up really rather liking her in the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. Where do you want to start? Oh, have you got more facts? Or
no.
That was it?
Okay. I literally have no more facts. They tried to turn it into a... They tried to get enough money to get it remade as a film and didn't land that money, so they just recut it as a film by cutting some bits out of it
and then put it on a DVD.
Probably not. That's really about it. There's very little.
Fair enough.
It's interesting because there's nothing, certainly on the Wikipedia page or anywhere else, about who commissioned it, who came up with the idea.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can only presume that the writer pitched it and just got picked up as part of the standard commissioning process. But yeah, where do I want to start? So I want to at least once use the word metatextual, because
you've been waiting for that.
I'm going to pretend that I know what it means.
Oh, go on. You haven't looked it up. Where did you find it?
Where did I come across it?
Yeah.
A ex-partner of somebody that we know used to use it a lot.
Okay.
You have a face, I'll explain later.
Fair enough.
So I wanted to mention some examples of when people have either known they're in a book, or some people have known that they're in a book.
Right.
So the media one that sprung to mind for this is obviously the Our Affair, which is
Thursday next,
Jasper Ford.
Air Affair.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
It's based on Jane Eyre.
Of course it is. Yes. That makes a lot more sense now, doesn't it?
Okay.
So, yes. So there's a series of novels written by Jasper Ford, starring a character called Thursday Next, in which she's in the literary crime.
Yeah. I wish I liked them more.
I really like them.
I know.
And she wanders into various books and I think she does some...
But she goes deliberately.
Yes.
To solve mysteries and crimes and stuff.
Yeah. But there's some Austen-related stuff in...
Yeah, I think it sounds vaguely familiar.
In some of those. Yes. But there is a certain thing about narrative being known as a thing that's driving the world.
Sure.
And what's happening in this is that when Amanda turns up in Pride and Prejudice, she often very crassly and at the end really... I don't quite understand how or why, really wants to drive things to be like they were in the book. So she's not necessarily trying to get people the best outcomes for them. She just wants it to be as it was in the book.
Yeah, because it's her all-time favourite book, and she knows it really well, and she feels like she's messed it up.
Yeah.
And it's not really Austen anymore, and she's trying to fix it.
I did wonder, just immediately sidetracked right at the start, but I did wonder whether there's a little bit of hubris in the writer saying, I can make these characters better than Austen, or I can do pairings that are different to Austen.
I don't think it's a superiority thing. I think it's just fun playing around with it.
Okay. I mean, I hadn't really thought about it, but very obviously, you know, it is a piece of fan fiction, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the end of the day, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. There's never any sort of existential, oh my God, these people are fictional, or oh my God, I'm a fictional character, which, you know, you sometimes see in things.
Right.
There's a bit where, because Amanda wanders into this world literally with a copy of P&P in her pocket, that at one point in time she gets really frustrated with what's going on and chucks it out a window or something.
Yeah, and then, she rips it up and throws it in the fountain.
And then Darcy goes and finds it and accuses her of writing this novel with all of these people in, which is bonkers because she's only met them a few days previously.
Yes.
And, you know, you couldn't possibly have printed anything at that kind of quality in 1820.
It's fair. It doesn't really make sense. But I guess the argument for that is that she's meant to have been friends with Lizzie and heard all about them beforehand.
Oh, true, yeah. I mean, I did find what I expected to happen when these pages are all, like, lying around in the fountain afterwards was for one of the characters to fish them out and then try and predict the future from what had come out of it. But that didn't happen.
No.
So they didn't really do a lot with the meta-textualityness.
Okay.
I'm here all podcast.
Huh.
Of it all. There is a bit of a, I thought, really quite underplayed bit at the end where, because we haven't really talked about the plot, so give it a little bit of context for where I'm going. So Amanda lives a fairly normal life. I think she works in a bank.
Yeah, all of the stuff in modern day London is cliché-tastic and not great.
She's got a rubbish boyfriend who proposes with a ring pull
from a can.
From a can, and he is just generally rubbish.
Unfortunate.
And then she discovers a door in her bathroom
which
goes
Lizzie
in.
Lizzie comes through the door in her bathroom.
Yeah, and then.
And then entices her to go through the door and then shuts it so that she can kind of take over
Amanda's
life.
Yeah, and then Amanda's in the top of
Longbourn,
thank you. I can no good with names. But so Lizzie goes and stays in the real world. I was hoping that we were going to get a like constantly switched double narrative.
Yeah, I remembered it that way.
Of seeing Lizzie in the real world, and we basically see nothing of Lizzie at all until
episode four,
until final
episode.
But there is a bit where suddenly, out of nowhere, in episode four, we end up with Amanda back in the real world, and we find out later that Darcy's followed her through.
Yeah.
And you obviously don't get Darcy going, how are these carriages moving without any horses? And, you know, all this kind of stuff that you would get
in
the...
Well, he's fairly stunned by it all.
I guess. But it still doesn't lead into talking about them being fictional.
No.
That's not really touched on. It's not what the writer is trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first thing that I was going to comment on. Is there anything you want to leap in with?
Well, the main divergences... are Jane marries Mr. Collins.
That is...
Which is shocking. It's absolutely a gut punch. I was just horrified. I hadn't remembered that at all. And
but
then...
it's absolutely what would happen, because it's absolutely what Mrs. Bennet has wanted all
absolutely.
Along.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed. And the only reason that it doesn't happen in the book is because she tells Mr. Collins that she's expecting Jane to get a proposal from Bingley. But because that hasn't, they haven't really interacted, because Bingley likes Amanda to begin with. He gets dazzled by Amanda for reasons passing understanding. And then Bingley goes completely off the rails and starts drinking a lot and punches Darcy and nearly shoots him
by accident.
By accident, yes. And starts hanging around with Wickham, which was hilarious.
I really thought there's a bit halfway through where there's a shooting party, and I'm like, it's kind of a comedy-ish. Are they actually going to shoot somebody dead accidentally in episode three?
Mr. Bennet nearly dies.
Yeah, well, that's at the end. So before we get there.
Yes, and then it turns out that Wickham's actually a good guy, which I really enjoyed.
Yes.
Because the bit that you were horrified by, Georgiana
thrown totally under the bus.
Yeah, that she threw herself at him and he rejected her because she was too young, and he allowed the story to be told that he had seduced her to save her reputation.
Which makes no sense, because nobody else would know.
No, exactly.
And also, can I just mention, since we've jumped to that part, that one of the things in this that made no sense is that Darcy's basically shut up Georgiana in her room to keep her away from everybody else for some reason, presumably to protect her innocence. And Amanda goes to go and have a chat with her, and she walks in, and I don't know how old Georgiana is supposed to be in this, like 16, 16 17, something like that? And she's sitting in a room playing with dolls, which is like weird for that age. And they have a conversation in which, apropos of nothing, Georgiana explains exactly what she did to a complete stranger two minutes after they meet.
It doesn't really hold together, because Amanda then eventually makes a deal with Lady Catherine that in exchange for Lady Catherine getting Collins and Jane's marriage annulled,
yes,
she will refuse Darcy.
No, she doesn't say that. She says that you will completely abstain yourself from society and I will never see you again.
Yes, okay, which would be going away and not marrying Darcy.
Not necessarily. You could marry Darcy and then lock yourself in the house and never go out again.
Well, I mean, she's clearly not going to fulfil the bargain because yes. She pretty much immediately goes and inveigles Darcy into marrying her.
Yes.
In which case, the annulment wouldn't happen. And even if it does, Collins then gets the house.
Well, Collins gets the house. Well, not necessarily because didn't Amanda say at some point that she was going to get either?
Oh, she was going to buy it. Yeah.
Either Darcy or.
Well, they
Bingley
make a whole thing
it.
About her yes. having £27,000 a year, which is obviously her salary at the bank.
Yes.
But in the world of and her being thus fantastically rich.
Yeah.
But in the world of the book, she doesn't have access to any of that money, so no. That doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And because Bingley's been wandering about, and actually Bingley is the one who elopes with Lydia.
Which was kind of funny.
Why would Jane still want him?
Oh, I mean, who knows why people do stuff.
And isn't Lydia's reputation still ruined because she stayed the night in a hotel
yes.
with Bingley and he doesn't marry her because he's going to take Jane to America? So the whole thing falls apart at the end.
Yes, it is. It is a bit.
But there's an awful lot of amusing things in between.
There is a. And no doubt we will touch on this much more in the diversity section, but there's also a intimation at the end that Wickham is heading for a dalliance with Caroline Bingley.
Yeah, which made no sense because Caroline Bingley told Amanda that she was gay.
Exactly, yes.
So yeah, it's all complete nonsense.
Yes, it is in fact complete nonsense. I liked... You mentioned that Wickham was the good guy.
Mm.
I like the fact that Bingley and Lydia elope and Wickham goes and finds them in
yeah.
the way that Darcy goes and finds Wickham.
Yes,
when...
yes. I really like Wickham in this.
And because it's really funny because they go to Hammersmith, because that's where Amanda
says she's from. Yeah.
Says she's from, and that's where Lizzie is, allegedly,
yeah.
in the book world. Which one of the things that doesn't make any sense, which if Lizzie was only, you know, a few hours away, you'd be writing a letter every single day.
Yeah. Well, she does write a few letters and puts them under the door.
Yeah,
in the attic.
Yes, but she'd be writing to her parents every single day if she was only,
well,
you know... Because that's,
yes
that,
no.
that's what they do in Australia,
sure.
They write letters all the time. But, so they go to Hammersmith in the book world
mm.
to go and look for Bingley and Lydia because
yeah.
that's where they've run off to. And there's this bit where Wickham is already there because he's worked out where they've gone and has found the tavern that they're staying
mm.
in. And so they go and confront Bingley. And Bingley's... Lydia is crying and Mr. Bent is like, what have you done to my daughter? And Bingley's like, she's just really, really bored because nothing's happened. And then Darcy dashes in going to, aha, I saved the day. And it turns out that the day has already been saved by other people and he has nothing
yes.
to do.
Yeah, Darcy doesn't really have very many redeeming features.
No.
In this.
Well.
He doesn't do it for me in this at all. And I, shall we get the horror out of the way?
Which one?
Well.
So many to choose. Oh, the pond.
Mm,
yes.
Because Amanda is not only obsessed with the novel, but also obsessed with the 90s BBC adaptation, which I hate with the passion of a thousand suns.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because of the wet shirt in the
yeah.
pond moment.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes Darcy in this reenact it. And I think I probably frightened the neighbours with my reaction.
Which is mostly funny because of almost... So they've shot a lot of the period bits in really, really beautiful houses and gardens, various
mm.
ones around
mm-hmm.
the country, really nice. I was going to say, I asked ChatGPT to tell me where it was, and it gave me a whole load of list of things, but it could have just made them all up. So
yeah. Yeah.
It's no way of knowing. But what was notable when they were wandering around the gardens of the really attractive house that's supposed to be Pemberley?
Yeah.
Is that you can see all the actors' breath. So it's obviously
really cold.
It's obviously really cold, and
when
they
stick him in the fountain,
when they stick
yeah.
him in the pond, it must have
wow.
been absolutely freezing.
Yes, But I'm sure that that was an incredible fan service moment for most people, but I can't even. It was just horrifying. Anyway, but yes, he does an awful lot of eyebrow acting. He just looks really grumpy the whole time.
It's interesting because I specifically wrote down eyebrow acting as a thing, and also chin wobble.
Oh, didn't spot the chin wobble.
He has a moment when I thought it was a really good piece of writing that, okay, taking a step back even further. Basically, every single, as in unattached, male character in this falls in love with Amanda.
Yes. Which is very tedious. Well, Wickham doesn't.
No, well, and Wickham likes her a lot. He admires her for her crassness.
Yes, I guess. But yes, it was inexplicable.
Everybody likes her. Even Lady Caroline likes her.
Yes, I know. Yes, absolutely.
Which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. I was going to say the only person who doesn't like her is Caroline Bingley, but of course Caroline Bingley makes a pass at us.
I thought that's who you meant by...
No, Lady Catherine. Sorry, yes. Even Lady Catherine likes her, yes.
Really?
At the end, she says, "You should have been my creature."
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. What a line. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, but no, Caroline Bingley throws herself at her. Propositions her.
Yeah, yeah.
So she is completely irresistible, apparently, which I don't understand.
Well, it's only because she's so different and she's so self-confident.
I guess. But yeah, she didn't do anything for me at all.
But there's a bit where Darcy says, "Oh, much against my better judgment, you know, I have fallen in love with you." And she's like, "That's great. I like you too." Unlike in the book where Lizzie goes, "Bog off." And they have a conversation in which she reveals that she used to live with another man.
Oh, she's not a virgin, yes.
And then Darcy says, "Oh, I cannot marry you because you are not a maid."
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really good piece of writing because it wasn't
And then he just goes back on it. At the end, for no reason.
Yes, but I thought it was a really good piece of writing because so often in Austen and other kind of contemporary things, you see people stopped from doing stuff because of external pressure.
Mm.
You can't marry Jane, says Darcy to Bingley, because she's terribly inappropriate to look at her mother. Mm. Whereas Bingley's like, "I don't care." Whereas when Darcy says to Amanda, "I can't marry you because you're not a virgin," that's a thing that he's doing to himself because of his own code.
Yeah. It's not a societal thing because nobody would know.
Yeah.
So I
thought that was...
Which is why it then doesn't make any sense that he just forgets about it at the end.
Well, I don't think that. I think he loosens up somewhat.
No, maybe.
So...
Anyway.
But yeah, I thought that was a good piece of writing.
Yeah. What else you got?
Well, I've got a lot of notes and we are all over the place. So can I take a step back and do some more sort of general bits?
Whatever you like.
In terms of the visual style, it was really, really... it was very cheaply shot, as in the actual camera, I think, was probably quite cheap. But the locations and the costumes were just great.
Yes.
Really, really good. The actual directing was really good. I sometimes talk about the music. It was entirely forgettable in this. It is a bit weird in a couple of places because it's supposed to be her favourite book.
Mm.
And yet she doesn't seem to acknowledge the bit. And she wants things to conform to the narrative as it was.
Yes.
But she doesn't seem to acknowledge the bit where Darcy has to tell Bingley that it's that Jane is not someone that he should marry, and then go off, and also that Darcy is supposed to originally not like her and change his mind later on.
No,
she wants to jump to the end point.
She just wants to get to where it's all resolved. Yes.
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 So she's not. She doesn't want to take it through the narrative arc. She just wants to jump to the end.
Yeah.
And she often just says things like, "Oh, you two people who've just met, you should get married. That would work really well."
Yeah, because when she brings Lizzie back through and tries to fix it by introducing her to Darcy,
so that was
it's very forced and very ridiculous. So that doesn't work, which is great.
So that was the other thing I was going to say, which was that she moons on in episodes 3 and 4 about how she's fallen in love with Darcy. Why, dear God, why?
Well, quite.
And yet, when Lizzie comes back through from the real world into the book world, the first thing that she does is try and force them together.
Well, Darcy's already said that he can't ever marry
her.
Well,
yes, fair.
And her boyfriend back in the other world has slightly improved.
Well, he hasn't, because he tries to punch Darcy several times when Darcy's in the thing.
I mean, he looks like he's improving and then it all goes wrong again.
Yeah, so the thing with her, so very briefly, her boyfriend seems to be, as you say, a better guy, and then they suddenly have to make him someone that she's not interested in.
Yeah.
And so he
gives her an ultimatum.
Well, no, he suddenly becomes a dick for no reason, just so they can write him out, which was a little bit irritating. But yeah, it was just, it was more important to Amanda that the narrative that everybody knows and loves of Darcy and Lizzie getting together happens than her own personal happiness of going off with Darcy. I think landing the story was more important to her at that point. Which was interesting. In fact, I think she says either to Darcy and or Lizzie, or possibly even both, that they should get married because of duty. And when she's talking about duty, she doesn't mean duty in the terms of like 1820s life. She means duty in terms
to
of
the story.
To the story.
Yes.
That you should do this because of the narrative, which is, you know, imposing a thing that they don't even, you know exists.
No, agreed.
So that is a bit, it is a little weird. I think, with absolutely no doubt whatsoever, that she should have got together with Wickham at the end, because the two of them would have been
excellent. They were a great pairing, I agree.
Some little bits related to the period. No comment about what she's wearing when she first turns up in the house.
Well, there is, but not as much as you would expect. Mrs. Bennet is worried about her distracting the men from her daughters by what she's wearing, which is why she sends her off to go and borrow some of Lizzie's clothes.
The writer has obviously read something somewhere about how they cleaned their teeth with salt.
The whole thing about with chalk.
Salt and chalk.
Yeah.
So much so that it's brought up, I think, about four or five times in the story.
Yeah, and it is all very, you know, supposedly romantic, that she's found love and she feels as if she fits in better, despite the fact that obviously she doesn't. But, you know, indoor plumbing and being able to brush your teeth, it's going to get old very quickly.
Vaccinations,
quite, yes. So I don't think that it's really viable.
She gets up the next morning after she arrives and she's still wearing makeup.
Yeah, good point, yes.
So that was definitely a thing. I thought it was interesting with Amanda that she never just assumes that she's having a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, fair.
She just like, I'm just going to roll with the fact that I have walked into a book. It's all fine.
Yeah. That's not an unreasonable point as it goes.
You mentioned earlier about she makes a deal with Lady Catherine to get Jane and Bingley's wedding annulled by agreeing to stay out of society. And there's a broader piece, which is it's assumed at the end that she's going to marry Darcy and go off and live at Pemberley.
Yep.
And do what? Because, you know, women aren't allowed to have jobs or really do anything. She can throw, you know, balls, I suppose. But other than that, what's she going to do with her life?
Yeah.
Darcy, she makes a whole point at one of the meals that Darcy doesn't do anything. And Darcy says, obviously, of course not. The point of the upper class is to be seen to be able to exist without needing to work for it. That's why we're here. And I can't imagine that she's going to be very happy with the idea of just sitting around and, you know, reading the books in the library and not doing anything else ever again. So yes, I don't know what she plans to do with the rest of her life.
Yeah, it really doesn't make any sense.
Mr. Bennet is excellent, but he's quite mean to Mary and Kitty at one point, though. Which
Well, he is in the book.
Is he?
Yeah, he's not a very good father to any of them, really. Oh, yeah, I mean, Lizzie is obviously his favourite and she's not really in it. But I did like when, after Amanda says that she'll buy Longbourn and thus solve the Bennets' issues with the entailment, and Mrs. Bennet then has the confidence to chuck Lady Catherine and Mr. Collins out of the house.
Yes.
And Mr. Bennet kind of sits up and goes, "Tally ho, wife," which I thought was great. And then Lady Catherine outside talking to Amanda says, "The propagation of the Bennets is a tumour that society must cut from its own flesh," which is a bit much.
Oh, can I just say one more thing, if that's all right? So, as per P&P, our protagonist, Lizzie in the book and Amanda in this, meets Darcy.
Yes.
Thinks Darcy's pretty, you know, rubbish.
Yeah.
And then gets in a carriage and goes to Pemberley.
Yeah.
And then gets out of the carriage and looks at the giant house.
Oh, hush. That is not how it happens.
That's exactly how it happens.
I mean, it does kind of happen like that in this, but that's not how it works in the book. No. No.
Okay.
Never going to accept that argument.
Right. Shall we do some diversity?
Is there any? I mean, there's the queer representation from Caroline.
I've got a bunch of stuff under gender.
Oh, sure.
I thought it was interesting from a hair, makeup and costume point of view how they make characters that are supposed to be attractive, attractive, and characters that are supposed to be unattractive, unattractive.
Okay.
So I imagine that the gentleman that plays Bingley, the gentleman that plays Wickham, are perfectly reasonable-looking men, but they are made up in such a way to make them look really attractive.
But they don't manage to do that with Darcy, because I don't find him attractive at all.
No.
He just looked like a petulant child all the way through.
I agree, but they did, I mean, especially for Wickham, they did a particularly good job.
Yes, yes.
And they do a good job for Lizzie and for Lydia, but Caroline and Mary, not Caroline.
Kitty.
No.
No?
Charlotte.
Charlotte, yes. Charlotte goes to Africa as a missionary.
Yeah.
Fair.
Charlotte, Kitty / Mary, and there was somebody else as well. I forget. But anyway, but the characters who are not supposed to be attractive are not attractive. And it's not because the actresses are not attractive, but it's because the way they've been styled.
Right, yes, I see what you mean.
No makeup and the way they've done the hair and everything. Yeah. It's really interesting if you are a professional, like hair and makeup artist, that you cannot just not do things to people.
Yeah.
And then in comparison they look less attractive, but actively do things to people that makes them less attractive.
Okay, yeah, I kind of see what you mean.
Which I thought was really interesting. Yeah, we've got the, as you say, Caroline Bingley turning out to be gay. I thought there was a really interesting, very, very briefly touched on reference to the fact that in, I was going to say classical literature, I don't know if 19th century counts as classical, it doesn't, does it? But in sort of 18th, 19th century literature, there are a lot of examples of two women non-sexually sleeping in the same bed.
Yes.
And often cuddling. It's
usually sisters.
Yes, and often cuddling in the same bed. What do you call it? Amanda is like completely thrown when she's lying in bed and
Jane's suddenly
there and she's like, "What?" Yeah, I thought that was really interesting because that's completely gone away as certainly in our culture as a thing that would be normalised.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And we have Darcy near the end asleep. And while he's asleep, Amanda goes and kisses him in his sleep in a totally non-consensual way.
Yes. Yes. Fair.
Which I was like, "Grr, grr."
Yes.
Anything else?
Don't think so.
Okay. I feel like I've done 90% of the talking. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I had very little to say, if I'm honest. I took nearly no notes, really. So that's fine.
I was surprised both at how many notes I took and also, this is going to sound so incredibly mean, but given that it's not very good, how much I enjoyed it.
Well, good and enjoyable are not necessarily the same thing.
Yes.
That is often, it works the other way around as well. There's an awful lot of things that I think are excellent but aren't enjoyable.
Oh, 100%, yes.
But yes, I guess that about wraps it up for this month's discussion. So it's time for the ratings. We use a standard 5-star rating system with half stars allowed. Dave, what is your rating for Lost in Austin?
I can never stop thinking about how Terry pointed out that's actually a 10-point system.
Shush. It's fine.
I'm going to give it 3.5.
Oh, okay.
Because of the enjoyment factor.
Okay, excellent.
How about yourself?
Well, often when we have these discussions, my ratings go up.
Yeah, mine
throughout
too.
The episode, and this time I think it's going down.
Oh, gosh.
Because I kind of listed out all the ways it doesn't make any sense. So I'm going to go 2.5.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
I didn't really still love it.
Sorry. Yes.
Sorry. That's okay.
No, fair enough. Sorry.
I mean, bits of it I thought were absolute genius, but overall it doesn't really hang together, which is a bit of a shame. But a lot of it was still quite fun, and I just didn't like Amanda. That was the biggest issue I had with it. She was just really objectionable to me.
You could have, I'm not sure if it would have worked, but you could have just had the same Austin characters kept entirely in the book world and do the same plot, where it looks like it's going to be Pride and Prejudice, and then suddenly
somehow it goes
Bingley
wrong.
Jane marries Collins. Thank you. Yes, and then you do the rest of the stuff without having to have Amanda as a character, and without having to have all the other stuff, and that would probably make its own really good story, and you wouldn't have to have the other character in it. I think.
What you'd do
with Lizzie in that would be difficult.
One thing that is true, but there's one thing that I do want to revisit, and I hope is as good as I remember, which is the Austin Choose Your Own Adventure book, where you hop between the books and everything gets mashed up between different books and different characters, and I remember that being great, but maybe it's not.
Is there a thing like Dickensian, where there's something that somebody's made that has characters from lots of different Austin things all in one?
I don't think so, and that's the closest I can think of is the Choose Your Own Adventure book.
Okay, we'll have a look.
So, what are we doing next month?
I'm very, very sorry.
Right. You need to bear in mind that we're not going to have a huge amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as it's not too long.
Oh, it's not long.
Okay.
No. It's just probably...
Especially if I do it on double speed.
Oh, you will almost certainly have to do it on double speed.
Okay.
Just to survive.
God, what are you going to do to me?
I am picking the 1992...
Uh-oh.
Rutger Hauer...
Oh.
...epic Split Second.
Okay. See, that sounds amazing, because I love Rutger Hauer. Are you aware of my Rutger Hauer obsession? You must be aware of my Rutger Hauer obsession. Well, we'll be able to get into that next month.
Okay. Right. Well, that's it for this month's episode of Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music, and thank you all for listening. If you like the show, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you have any comments, or if you want to tell us about a time you shared some media you love and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can email us at willyoustilloveit@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And you can follow us on Blue Sky at still-love-it.bsky.social.
And you can buy our merch at bit.ly/love-it-tomorrow-podcast.
So please join us next month to find out what Annie thinks of Split Second.
And whether or not Dave still loves it after our discussion.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.